Hello and welcome back to another episode of Mum Says It's My Turn with me, Fraser. I played an interesting game this week. It was recommended to me by Poppy, who I consider to be something of a gaming protege of mine, a game called What Remains of Edith Finch. The game was originally released back in 2017. It's an atmospheric, interactive story that plays out in the style of an anthology of tragic tales, all tying back to one cursed family. It's a very eerie, beautiful game, and is a standout example of the kind of highly immersive storytelling that I think video games are so well suited to. It's only a few hours long, but it's a jam-packed few hours. You can experience home invasion, commercial fishmongering, being a human-eating sea monster, being literally birthed, and more infanticide than you can shake a stick at. So it's not a full-blown horror, but it definitely has some good creepy moments of tension. Anyway, it made me realize that I haven't really talked about horror much on this podcast yet. And horror is a genre that's one of my absolute faves. And now that Easter has come and gone, spooky season is basically round the corner. But I can't wait till then to stroll through Spooky Town, so I thought we'd get the jump on it now, pun very much intended. Horror as a genre is an interesting one. It's kind of polarizing, very much a love-hate kind of thing. In one camp, you have people like me who love horrors, love being scared, and in the other camp, you have babies. But even with people so divided, horror is still one of the most popular genres. But why do so many people enjoy horror? I did some digging. There seems to be no singular explanation as to why humans enjoy being scared. But it does seem to be something along the lines of practicing being in a threatening situation with the safety blanket of it not actually being real. When we watch something scary, our brains can't initially discern whether the threat is real or not, which seems great and totally not a design flaw of our brains at all. This basically triggers our fight or flight response, releasing adrenaline into our bodies. Jump scares and emotional climaxes within the movie then act as a tension relief that releases dopamine and endorphins, hence why we enjoy it so much. My own personal journey with the horror genre began when I watched Sixth Sense when I was about 11 or 12. Needless to say, I was completely traumatized and couldn't sleep for weeks. I feel like Sixth Sense is pretty well known. It's an M. Night Shyamalan classic starring Bruce Willis and Haley Joel Osment. It has a now infamous signature plot twist, Shyamalan-esque creepy deadpan performances, and arguably one of the most recognizable lines in horror history, "I see dead people." M. Night Shyamalan is a very interesting director. His movies tend to walk a very fine line between sheer brilliance and confusing, ridiculous nonsense. However, you can't deny that he's unique. And with a few horror classics under his belt by this point, he's kind of a legend, at least in my eyes. The next horror movie I remember watching was an amazingly cheesy 2001 movie called 13 Ghosts, starring Tony Shalhoub, Matthew Lillard, and F. Murray Abraham. It was a remake of a movie from 1960 of the same name, and interesting tidbit about the original film. The premise of the movie is that you can't see the ghosts in this haunted house unless you're wearing these special glasses. When cinema goers went to see the movie back in 1960, they were given special glasses to wear, which allowed them to see the ghosts. Basically, a clever filming technique called Illusion-O, and glasses with red and blue filters would allow you to watch the movie either with or without the ghosts on screen. It's a gimmick for sure, but I think a very cool, innovative gimmick, it has to be said. Anyway, now, critically, the remake was not well received, and today it doesn't really hold up very well at all. But let me tell you, as a kid, this movie was so intense. Also, I swear it was a rite of passage for kids my age at the time to watch this movie. I remember tons of my friends had seen this film and were all equally freaked out by it. Let me know if that also applied to you, by the way. Anyway, despite being completely wigged out, I was also very aware of how much I enjoyed it, and I began watching more and more spooky movies. I remember I would always watch a very non-threatening movie immediately after watching a horror, so that whatever I had just seen wouldn't haunt me as I was trying to sleep. For a long time, my go-to ghost prevention movie was the Shia LaBeouf movie Holes, which is the most amazing and also most benign film imaginable. I will say, though, that a prolonged exposure to horror movies did begin to desensitize me a little. That being said, one movie which really messed me up was a movie called Eden Lake from 2008. It stars Michael Fassbender, Kelly Reilly, and a young Jack O'Connell. It is a harrowing film. For ages, I hated that I had ever watched it. It's only in more recent years that I've realized it's just an amazing horror, and I really was just getting what I asked for. I think I found it so haunting because there's no demons or ghosts or monsters, but the antagonists of this film are unruly British teenagers, which are kind of everywhere here in the UK. So yeah, it was a little close to home for me. Anyway, by my late teens, I was consuming horror as fast as I could. Unfortunately, though, horror is kind of an overlooked genre. There's not an endless supply of great horror movies. And in fact, there's a lot of duds out there. More serious filmmakers tend to go for other genres, and the good filmmakers that do try their hand at horror often aren't rewarded for it. As of today, there's only been one Oscar's Best Picture winner that was a horror. Can you guess what it is? The Silence of the Lambs. And only five more have ever been nominated. Go on, call them out. That's it. The Exorcist, Jaws, Sixth Sense, Black Swan, and most recently, Get Out. So, horror is often overlooked critically, but it's not like we don't see significant commercial success in this genre. We've already established people like going to see horrors. And if you understand how to manufacture tension, you can create horror for not much money. The Blair Witch Project is one of the most famous horror movies for this reason. The found footage movie was created on a budget of something like $60,000, and it made almost $250 million at the box office. And I'll ruffle a few feathers here, but it's not even that good of a movie. It did have a cool premise, though, and it had one of the most successful viral marketing campaigns in movie history, which may have included alluding that the footage was legit and the actors were never found. The viral marketing campaign for this movie was so successful, and remember, by the way, that this was all pre-social media, that the actors' families actually received condolence letters from people in the wake of the movie coming out. Another similar success story was 2007's Paranormal Activity, which cost around $200,000 or so to produce and made around $194 million at the box office. I actually rewatched this film recently, and it's still amazing. So simple, all because the filmmakers know how to create tension. So anyway, there's plenty of money to be made with horror. Naturally, you know, big Hollywood studios want a piece. Now, I don't know who is at the top of the food chain who insists that every big budget horror movie has to end with a supernatural fight scene. So often they'll start with a cool premise and there's a lot of tension, but then they don't know where to go with it. So they shove a bunch of pointless jump scares in there, and then the movie inevitably finishes with the main character and a demon like wrestling, and then they shoot it with a gun dipped in holy water or some other nonsense. Case in point is the latest Exorcist movie. Now, the original Exorcist is obviously a classic, an iconic movie that really put horror on the map. And I was kind of excited to see the latest follow-up. The trailer looked okay, and it seemed to be returning to the franchise's roots. But yeah, bit of a disappointment. Again, it felt like it started well, but I spent the second half mostly just rolling my eyes. Thing is, though, this movie still made $140 million on a budget of only $30 million. It's comparatively cheap to produce blockbuster horror movies, and people are so desperate for a fright that they'll go and see it, even if it's bad. The 2018 horror movie The Nun was universally lambasted by critics and audiences alike, but it still made $366 million on a budget of only $22 million. So they made a second one, and people still went to go see it, even though the first one sucked. It made $270 million on a budget of $38 million. Insane. Now, that's not to say that there aren't any good horrors being made. In the last few years, there have been some amazing movies with a few filmmakers really leading the way, such as Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, and Robert Eggers, who are like the poster boys for new and exciting horror. Ari Aster's horror masterpieces are Hereditary and Midsommar. Hereditary is an amazing movie with Toni Collette and Alex Wolff in the lead roles. It follows a family struggling to cope in the face of tremendous loss as a mysterious cult attempts to harness their grief for the purposes of summoning a demon. I loved this movie. Absolutely worth a watch if you're feeling brave. Ari Aster then followed this up by asking, what's scarier than a demon-worshipping murderous cult? That's right, Swedish people. Midsommar follows a group of American anthropology students as they visit a quirky Swedish commune during the Midsommar festivities. They soon find out that the members of the commune have more in store for them than just maypole dancing and psychedelic drugs. It stars the amazing Florence Pugh and is an interesting film because all of the horror of this movie is shown to us in broad daylight. Definitely another one to check out if you haven't already. My buddy Alex, who I'm hoping to get on as a guest on this podcast, lives in Sweden and has invited me over there for Midsommar festivals. Needless to say, I won't be rushing to Sweden to celebrate Midsommar festivities anytime soon after having watched this film. Robert Eggers is probably most known for The Witch, starring Anya Taylor-Joy, which is based on Puritan fear-mongering in early 1600s America. A banger of a movie with amazing creepy vibes that will definitely make it difficult to trust a goat ever again. And The Lighthouse, which is an insane movie starring Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe, where the characters are slowly losing their sanity, isolated at the titular lighthouse. Another two movies highly, highly worth a watch. And Jordan Peele has directed three horror movies so far, Get Out, Us, and Nope, which are all very different but all excellent. Jordan Peele's movies are all racially themed, which gives them a different and important angle. As with movies like Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity, you can often find interesting new things happening in the lower budget movies. Talk to Me has been mentioned a few times on this podcast. Nat and Ian both mentioned it as the best movie they've seen recently. It is an amazing movie, by the way. Also, It Follows is another example of a great idea executed really well. In that movie, the characters must escape a demon that slowly but continuously pursues them. Really interesting movie. What these films and Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity all have in common is that they all explore new ideas not really seen before, giving them a fresh perspective. They have compelling performances from relatively or completely unknown actors, which adds to the mystery and immersion. And because they aren't blessed with budget, they can't rely on things that cost a lot of money. They have to focus on creative ways of building tension, which ultimately leads to a more satisfying horror experience. So yeah, all hope is not lost. There's still plenty of great horror movies out there, and I'll make sure to let you know if I see any more. Now, it's worth mentioning that my interest in the horror genre also stemmed out of some games that I've played over the years. Video games are an amazing medium for horror. It's that much more immersive. You can't cover your eyes and wait for the scare to pass. You have to power through it. And like I already mentioned, I've become a little desensitized to the scares in movies. So the extra level of intensity that horror games brings is a big plus. I mentioned a few episodes back that I played the very first Silent Hill when I was younger. And actually, the version I played was a playable demo that came with Metal Gear Solid. And it's kind of interesting because probably the most iconic and talked about horror video game experience is another Silent Hill demo, the playable trailer for Silent Hills, commonly referred to as PT. And it's quite an interesting little story, at least I think so. First off, there was basically no marketing for this game at all. At the time of its release in 2014, Silent Hill was kind of a languishing franchise, and then out of nowhere, a playable trailer for a new Silent Hill game just appears on people's PlayStations. And let me tell you, It was good. You start as a character who wakes up in a dark room, no explanation, no dialogue, no nothing. You walk through a door and you find yourself in the corridor of a normal suburban American home. Nothing too scary so far, right? So you walk down the corridor, turn a corner, down another short corridor, past a few closed doors. You can't get through any of these doors, you can't leave, you can't go back the way you came. You go down a few stairs, through another door, which leads you right back to the start of the first corridor. What? It's not a loop, the geographies don't line up, it's like a Penrose Steps kind of situation, and it's surprisingly disorienting and legitimately unsettling. Anyway, a sort of story unfolds as you progress through the loops. There are some pretty difficult puzzles which were designed in such a way that they could only really be solved as part of a collective effort online. The whole thing is an absolute masterclass in tension and horror. And like I say, to this day, it's still regarded as one of the greatest horror games of all time. And it was only a demo. But there were a few things going on behind the curtain. The first peculiarity is that it really was nothing like any of the previous Silent Hill installations. It didn't have any of the trademark features of a Silent Hill game other than the name. Secondly, less than a year later, it was removed from the PlayStation marketplace without warning, never to be playable again. Although, I should say, plenty of avid fans have managed to lovingly recreate it since then. And the studio behind it, Konami, discontinued the title, with longtime Konami executive Hideo Kojima, who directed PT, leaving the company. Hideo Kojima being the closest thing we have to a celebrity in the gaming world, by the way. There's all sorts of speculation that PT was a sort of parting middle finger from Kojima to the parent company. I don't know about all that, but once Kojima left Konami and started his own studio, he released a game called Death Stranding in collaboration with Guillermo del Toro and starring Norman Reedus, who had also both been involved in PT. Fascinating stuff to speculate on, but the important thing is that Silent Hill's playable trailer was insanely good. If you fancy a really good scare, try out one of the recreations or search YouTube for PT playthrough. If you do check it out, make sure to let me know what you think. You get extra points if you watch it on your own in a dark room. Recently, a playable demo for a brand new Silent Hill game was released. I checked it out, again, I would say with very high expectations, but I was not particularly impressed. I found the dialogue to be a bit forced and clunky. It wasn't particularly tense or scary. It looked pretty amazing, in fairness. But I would say mostly it just falls victim to that familiar curse of being compared to an amazing previous installment in the franchise. And yeah, it doesn't even come close. Another game which I'm completely obsessed with and I'm always recommending is a game called Soma. It was produced by Frictional Games, who are also known for the Amnesia franchise, which are also very good. Oh, I love, love, love this game. In Soma, you wake up in an underwater research base as seemingly one of the last humans alive on Earth. You're not alone, however, as the base is haunted by Swedish people celebrating Midsummer. Oh no, sorry. It's haunted by monstrous robots possessed by the spirits of the base's former human inhabitants. There's something this game does really well, which I find interesting. In any horror video game that you play, as soon as you get a good hard look at the monster or the demon or whatever it is, it does kind of mitigate the fear a little bit. In Soma, though, you're punished by the game for looking at the enemies. It damages your character's sanity. This means you're forced to actually, you know, cower and creep around and look away from the enemies when they come on screen. This was almost certainly an intentional decision from the makers of the game to help preserve the anxiety as you play it through. Honestly, there's loads to choose from in terms of horror games. I've mentioned Dead Space before. The first game in that series in particular was amazing. Alien Isolation is another space-based horror where you're trying to hide from the iconic xenomorph of the Alien franchise. As usual, there's also plenty of unique creative ideas coming out of the indie scene. I played a game recently which some of you might have heard of called Choo Choo Charles. It's kind of a janky game. As I understand it, it was made by just one guy. In it, you are a monster hunter called to a remote mining town on a small island where a giant demon spider train named Charles has begun eating the local populace. You have to upgrade and add weapons to your own locomotive, take out into the night and fight Charles and discover the island's secrets. It's insane, but it's surprisingly tense and fun. I talked about how video games are a step above in terms of intensity to horror movies. If we take another step, we get VR. I've not really played any proper VR horror games yet. Actually, I played a couple of zombie games, but honestly, that's more of a fantasy for me than a horror. But really, I think I've mentioned the game Propagation, which is free to play, by the way. It also has a follow-up game called Paradise Hotel. It's got some good tension and some jump scares and good zombie VR combat. Definitely worth checking out if you've got your own VR system. But if you know of any other good horror VR games, please let me know. I'd be eager to try them out. Anyway, I'll probably call it there for this episode. I could talk horror recommendations for hours, so if you do want some more, then just let me know. Hopefully I've put you guys in the mood for something spooky. And if you are one of those people who doesn't like horrors, I'd encourage you to be brave. Push the boat out. You're missing out on a whole world of thrills. If you want something that's a little less intense, maybe watch Get Out by Jordan Peele. It's amazing, but isn't totally crammed with jumps and won't leave you feeling freaked out afterwards. Okay, off you trot now. Bye-bye.